A wealthy businessman was on his deathbed, and so he decided to call a preacher to come to talk and to pray with him. And after the preacher had done so, the businessman, he said, "Preacher, if God heals me and lets me live, I will give the church $1 million. Well, somehow, okay, against all hope, the man lived. And in fact, he was actually out of the hospital after just a few weeks, and he was able to go home. Well, a few months later, the preacher bumped into this guy on the sidewalk, and he said to him, "Well, you remember that when you were dying in the hospital, you said that if you got well, if you survived, that you would give the church $1 million. And the man replied, "Did I say that? Well, I guess it just goes to show how sick I really was." Okay, the disclaimer. This sermon is pointed, it is harsh, hard-hitting, and toe-stomping. I know because it stomped my toes. And I'm not preaching to anyone, I'm preaching to everyone, including myself. And thank God for His mercy and His forgiveness. I read about a mathematics teacher for Vanderbilt University who, before every exam, would say this: "Today I am giving two examinations, one in trigonometry and the other in honesty. I hope you will pass them both. If you must fail one, fail trigonometry. There are many good people in the world who can't pass trigonometry, but there are no good people who cannot pass the examination of honesty." Well, let's take a look at what the Apostle Peter had to say. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 14 through 16. "As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts, which were yours in your ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior, because it is written, 'You shall be holy, for I am holy.'" As Christians, we are called to radical holiness. We are not to look like the world. As the expression goes, we're to stick out like a sore thumb. You might say that we are on another plane of existence, a cut above. We have been born again. The ugly larva has turned into a beautiful butterfly. Now, take a look at what he said in chapter 2 and verse 12. "Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, on account of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation." So keep your behavior excellent. Now today, we're going to be talking about an important part of holiness and excellence, and that is uncompromising integrity. Integrity is a word that has to do with honesty and all the different aspects of it. Truthfulness, trustworthiness, fairness, and consistency. See, integrity, it excludes lying, cheating, theft, fraud, pilfering, shoplifting, dishonesty, plagiarism, extortion, bribery, robbery, stretching the truth, breaking a contract, showing favoritism, hypocrisy, false witness, and manipulation. Really just every form of deception or injustice. And as you know, the importance of integrity is found on page after page of the Scriptures. And our integrity, it is challenged every day in this world of win at all costs. And you'd probably agree that the lack of integrity in this country, it seems to be getting worse with each passing year. It is unusual for the daily news to not have some kind of report of unethical behavior, either by a business person, a politician, a lawyer, an athlete, an academic, someone cheating a government assistance program, and so forth. You know, in some places, if it's not chained down or behind locked doors, then it's stolen. And, well, sometimes the chain or the door doesn't even help. The words honest and repairman, they don't normally go together in our society. And then there's all the false or deceptive advertisement out there, and all of the spoofing and phishing and malware online, the computer viruses, worms, Trojan horses, adware, spyware, and ransomware. Also, you may have noticed the length and the frequency of contracts and agreements and disclaimers and waivers that you've got to sign nowadays, and all the caveats and small print. See, the reverence for honesty and for fairness that once characterized our society, it seems to be gone. His word is as good as his bond? No way. And this moral vacuum, it has a tendency to grow, because what it does is it causes our young people to grow up thinking that a person has to be at least a little bit underhanded to get by in this world. A few years ago, there was a survey, and it was with 30,000 high school students around the country. Now, let me show you some of the results. 59% agreed to the statement. In the real world, successful people do what they have to do to win, even if others consider it cheating. 40% agreed with the statement, a person has to lie or cheat sometimes in order to succeed. I sometimes lie to save money. 42% said yes. In the last 12 months, lied to a parent about something significant. 82% said yes. And the last 12 months, lied to a teacher about something significant. 65% said yes. In the last 12 months, copied an internet document for a classroom assignment, meaning that they plagiarized. 36% said yes. In the last 12 months, cheated during a test at school. 64% said yes. In the last 12 months, stole something from a store. 30% said yes. In the last 12 months, stole something from parents or relatives. 23% said yes. In the last 12 months, stole something from a friend. 20% said yes. From a friend? Really? And as bad as that sounds, those who conducted the survey said that it actually understates the dishonesty of American kids. How do they know? Because 26% admitted that they lied on some of their survey answers. And despite all the admissions of lying, cheating, and stealing, 93% describe themselves as satisfied with their personal ethics and character, and 77% said that when it comes to doing right, they are better than most people they know. Yeah. Well, they did the survey again a couple years later, and thankfully the numbers were a little bit better, but not much. So today, in part one, we are going to look at these first two pillars of integrity. And the first one is truthfulness. I heard about four high school students who were late to their morning classes. And though they entered the classroom and they solemnly told their teacher that, you know, they were sorry, and it was because of a flat tire. The sympathetic teacher, she smiled and she said that it was unfortunate because they had missed the test that morning. But, you know, she was willing to let them make it up. In fact, she'd let them take it right there. And so she sent them to four corners of the classroom, and she gave them all a piece of paper and a pencil. And on the paper was just one question: which tire was flat? So what does the Bible say? Well, it's more serious than you might think. Lying puts someone in league with Satan, since he is the father of lies, John 8:44. It's so serious that God killed Ananias and Sapphira in Acts 5 for a lie. The ninth of the Ten Commandments for the Jews: you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Proverbs 12:22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are his delight. Christians are told, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you with his neighbor, Ephesians 4:25. And do not lie to one another, since you laid aside the old self with its evil practices, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 9. And of course, there are many other passages that we could go to. Lying has become amazingly prevalent in our culture. You may remember, there was a dumb Jim Carrey movie back in 97. It was called Liar, Liar. And his character was this career-focused lawyer who would say just anything to win. But because of his son's wish, he was somehow forced to tell the truth for 24 hours. And after he discovered what was happening, well, he tried to get his son to take it back. And he said, Max, no one can survive in the adult world if they have to stick to the truth. And apparently, that's what most people think. I read about two surveys that were done a few years back. And one was a poll conducted for a book, The Day America Told the Truth. And the other was done by Reader's Digest. Well, they asked several questions to determine what percentage of people lied, and the results of the survey determined that over 90% of Americans are not truthful under certain circumstances. How many times have, in trials, have we seen witnesses proven to be false, telling lies either to help or to harm the person being tried? Stephen Duke, professor at Yale Law School, he's talking about this, and he said, perjury is commonplace in America. I don't know if that was as true a century ago as it is now. I imagine that a century ago, more people believed that God punished perjury than now, when it appears that almost no one believes that. You know, and how many times have politicians or the media been caught lying and so forth? Truthfulness is refusing to misrepresent any situation, statement, event, or reality. Truthfulness is owning up to any mistake. Truthfulness is trying to never leave the wrong impression. Truthfulness is not having a hidden agenda and manipulating people with our words. Now, what about little white lies and just exaggerating or stretching the truth? Well, grab a Bible if you would, and let's turn over to Genesis chapter 20. Here's an example from Abraham's life. When they were traveling in Gerar, because of fear, Abraham, he said that Sarah was his sister instead of his wife. And so the king of Gerar, you know, Abimelech, he sent for her to become his wife. But God warned Abimelech in a dream that, no, she was already married and that he was going to be in big trouble if he didn't restore her to Abraham. So let's read verses 8 through 12 of Genesis 20. So Abimelech arose early in the morning and called all his servants and told all these things in their hearing, and the men were greatly frightened. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Abraham, "What have you encountered that you have done this thing?" And Abraham said, "Because I thought, surely there is no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife." He's using situation ethics. "Besides, she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife." You see, Abraham, he said, "But I didn't lie." Not in the strict sense of the word, but he said it in a way to deceive. Is the intent to deceive? That's not integrity. Here's Merriam-Webster's definition. To lie is either to make an untrue statement with intent to deceive or to create a false or misleading impression. Okay, all right, so let's take an integrity test. Now, please don't raise your hand or nod your head or anything like that, because I don't want to feel obligated to do the same. We'll just put it like that. Have you ever shifted the blame to someone else for something you did? Have you ever made up an excuse for being late or for something you forgot to do? Have you ever taken credit for something someone else did? Have you ever lied to your kids just to get them out of your hair? Have you ever plagiarized? In other words, you're saying that you wrote something when you did not. Have you ever misstated facts on a job application? That's a sticky one. Have you ever lied to friends or family members about their appearance to avoid hurting their feelings? Have you ever lied to your spouse about the cost of a recent purchase? Have you ever told your kids or spouse, "Just tell them I'm in the shower," or something like that? Have you ever exaggerated about your abilities in order to impress someone? Have you ever called in sick to work when you were not ill? Have you ever told creditors that the check is in the mail when you have not yet mailed it? Have you ever lied about your kid's age in order to get into a movie or amusement park for less? Have you ever lied to a cop who just pulled you over? Have you ever lied or stretched the truth to protect a friend from the law? Jesus said to simply let your yes be yes and your no, no. Matthew 5:37, James 5:12. Uncompromising integrity. Well, the next one is trustworthiness. You may remember from the book of Genesis that Joseph, he kept on getting these promotions wherever he went, and it was mainly because of his trustworthiness. See, Potiphar made him overseer over his whole house, and the jailer put him in charge over all the prisoners, and it even says that the jailer didn't have to supervise anything under Joseph's charge. Genesis 39:23. This word is referring to faithfulness, reliability, dependability, loyalty. What you say with your lips, you follow up with your actions. And part of this is you don't promise people the moon when you know you can't even get to the clouds. You follow through on every job, responsibility, obligation, and promise. Your word is as good as your bond. You keep your appointments and commitments. You pay your debts. You respect confidences. People can trust you with their secrets. Proverbs 11:13 says, "He who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter." People can trust you with their money or with anything else that they put into your hands. See, everyone knows that you will do what you say you will do when you say you'll do it. As Carl Macer put it, a truly honest man, when placed in a confined area bounded by a chalk line and giving his word that he would not go beyond that line, would be more solidly contained than a man locked behind steel bars supported by a 10-foot thick stone wall with no such promise. In answering who will be able to dwell in the Lord's sanctuary, one of the things that the psalmist said was, "He who keeps his oath even when it hurts." Psalm 15:4. Do you keep your promises even when they get pricey? I mean, it's really easy to say things and to make promises when you're in a certain mood, like when you're feeling generous, or when you are desperate, like the dying businessman. But integrity says that you carry it out even when the mood is long gone. A good example of trustworthiness is when they were repairing the temple in 2 Kings chapter 12 and verse 15. They did not require an accounting from the men into whose hand they gave the money to pay to those who did the work, for they dealt faithfully. As has been said, talent is of little value without dependability. I mean, you ask any employer, and they're all going to say the same thing. You give them an untrained person who is dependable any day over a trained person who is undependable. Because they can train the dependable person, but they can do nothing about the undependable person. Also, as a side, would God consider us trustworthy with how we handle the Word of God? In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, "Let a man regard us in this manner, as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy." Okay, let's take another integrity test along the lines of trustworthiness. Have you ever broken a contract that you signed, like a lease or something like that? Have you ever said that you would have something done at a certain time, but were feeling lazy, and so you didn't finish it? Have you ever borrowed something that you broke and just returned it broken without trying to repair or replace it? Have you ever read through someone's texts or emails or snail mail without them knowing? Have you ever shared someone's secret that they asked you not to tell? Have you ever broken a promise to your kids or spouse? Have you ever broken a vow you made to God? Now, obviously, there are different situations, but have you ever declared bankruptcy without the intention of paying back what you owe? Have you ever said you would do something, but then had to have someone constantly remind you or even threaten you before getting it done? Theodore Roosevelt was known for saying, "It is better to be faithful than famous." May our lives be as such that people will be able to trust us fully and completely. Uncompromising integrity. Okay, next week we're going to look at fairness and consistency, as well as three ways to become a person of integrity. Can we say with the Hebrew writer, "We are sure that we have a good conscience, desiring to conduct ourselves honorably in all things"? Hebrews 13:18. And could Jesus say about you and me what he said about Nathanael in John chapter 1? "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit. Behold, an American Christian indeed, in whom there is no deceit." We can't change our past, but we can sure change our future. In the midst of a society that's telling us that winning is the greatest good and the end justifies the means, that it's good for you if you can get away with deception. In the midst of the scandals and the lies and the distrust and the dishonor that confronts us every day, will you and I live with integrity? You know, let's make it very clear to everyone around us that we would rather be poor and walk in integrity than be crooked, even though rich. Will we follow the world and sacrifice character for short-term gain, or will we follow Christ in uncompromising integrity? Charles Swindoll, he made the observation, "Few things are more infectious than a godly lifestyle. The people you rub shoulders with every day need that kind of challenge. Not prudish, not preachy, just crackerjack clean living. Just honest to goodness, bone deep, non-hypocritical integrity." And so I'd like to leave you with this anonymous poem. "Dare to be honest, good and sincere. Dare to be upright, and you never need fear. Dare to be brave in the cause of the right. Dare with the enemy ever to fight. Dare to be loving and patient each day. Dare to speak truth, whatever you say. Dare to be gentle and orderly too. Dare to shun evil, whatever you do. Dare to speak kindly and ever be true. Dare to do right, and you'll find your way through."